You know, over the years, we as a church have looked for avenues to be able to minister into people's lives. I mean, the biggest one, obviously, is Kids Camp. We've done that for 34 years. There are like thousands and thousands of kids have come to that. Hundreds of them have been saved here at camp. And some things are short-lived, some things are longer, but we're always looking for opportunities to make a difference in people's lives. And the best way to do that is to bring them into a personal relationship with Jesus. A few of you here, Joy, you were here for this. We had about 10 years, we had a school here, an umbrella school. They're called for homeschoolers. They have one now down in Bloomsburg. We did it for about 10 years. When our kids graduated and stuff, they all did from here. We felt it was time to take a break from that. Anybody here about 3 years ago when we had a law enforcement appreciation night here? There was no room at all in this whole building. It was probably our biggest crowd we ever had. Literally probably at least 300 or so here. And we had three speakers. One of them was our sheriff, Tim Chamberlain. And he still has a plaque, Jeremy, that Amy's kids in their shop class made him. And we gave it to him that night. He still has it hanging in his office. It's been 3-4 years ago. And make sure you tell Amy, I'll try to remember to tell her today too, how much she still appreciates that. We had Roger Ben Lone from Bloomsburg. He was the chief of police down at Bloomsburg for quite a while. He was here. We even asked him what was their favorite dessert. And all three of them, we had a Stady here from Hazleton, and they all wanted apple pies. So we literally made apple pies for these guys for about 2 months straight. Some of you made those pies, helping me make them, just to show our appreciation. Well, this coming month, we have another opportunity. Will it be a one-shot thing, or will it be an ongoing thing? I guess time will tell. But we have the opportunity, the 23rd of this month, to have the highest ranking enlisted Marine that there could be coming to share with us. He's a sergeant major. There's not too many of those guys. And he's going to come. And I've been developing a pretty good rapport with him and went out to lunch with him. And got permission to make up some flyers with his Marine uniform on him and standing with his wife that we can hand out to other people. We'll talk about that in a few moments down the road. But he's really looking forward to even having a potluck with us so he gets to know you. That's pretty neat, huh? And I told the rest of you, give Tom some room because he fought in Afghanistan along with this Luke. After Baghdad, he went to Afghanistan. So we're going to let Tom sit with him at lunch, and anybody else can crowd around, but there'll be plenty of time to talk to him. But it's just an amazing opportunity. And what I wanted to do next is to give Tom 10, 15 minutes or so to share with you how we could be better at ministering to vets, whether they were in a war or not. I know Rich Malott is coming up for it. He was in Vietnam several tours. Andrew's coming down. He was in Iraq several tours. And this would be an ideal time. A lot of them would come just to meet this guy, just to shake his hand. But I know Luke good enough that he's not coming to shake hands. He's coming to see what kind of people we can draw here as military people to minister to. And he's going to preach Jesus to him. He's a very strong, mature Christian. And they're going to get the gospel that day. So it's going to be a great opportunity. And I'll give you some ideas of how we can do that. But for first, Tom has been in Afghanistan for several times tours. You, I guess you were wounded, shot quite twice, huh? What's that? Oh. How's your hearing? But anyway, so I thought he would be a good one to come and share with us about how the importance of reaching out to these guys, these vets, and inviting them to this. And we got some plans how to best go about doing it. But Tom, if you want to come up and just share with us, and we'll go from then. There. Morning. So thanks again, everyone, for, you know, we moved to the area a couple years ago for, you know, being so welcoming to me and my family. We definitely appreciate it. But I wanted to ask, how many people here personally know a veteran, either work life, extended family, friends? Yeah, so pretty much we all know someone who served or who, you know, went overseas, or maybe they served during a peacetime. But with you know, with veterans, it's very, very unique experiences that you go through. And society, kind of, especially towards combat veterans, you know, society will tell us that pretty much we're broken in one of two ways. Either we're these passive victims that were, you know, forced into a system that go overseas and, you know, oppress and do horrible things, or the second way that society tells us that we are kind of disconnected and broken is that we're these bloodthirsty maniacs that need to be isolated and, you know, kept away from the decent people of America. And, you know, that's kind of the prevailing mindset for a lot of people when they deal with veterans. And unfortunately, that's, you know, it's affected me, it's affected people I know, but it's also incorrect. You know, there needs to be a new path forward for veterans, and especially combat veterans, because the, you know, those two discussions or anything that leads in the middle, they're all wrong. The, you know, the only path forward, whether you're a veteran, whether you are a civilian, the only path forward really is through Christ. And I think we all know that. The problem is, how do you approach and talk to people that have a different experience, that have gone through different things in their life, and how do you relate to them? And, you know, that is definitely a problem, especially when you look at the recent wars. So Vietnam, Iraq, Afghanistan, these were all fairly unpopular wars in the American mindset with, you know, with politicians and things like that. And, you know, the American people, you know, have always supported the soldiers, sailors, and the Marines. The American people have always done a great job welcoming us home. But these are unpopular wars. And with these being unpopular wars, you come home, if you do a full 20 in whatever service you're in, or, you know, you go, you do a couple tours, you decide, yeah, I had my fun, it's time to get out and move on with my life. Regardless of what you do, when you come home, you kind of try to dump all that experience. You kind of put it in the back of your mind, you move on with your life. And I would categorize that as one of the first types of veterans, people who served, they did their duty, and now they're back home. You know, whether they're single or they have a family, they're back home, they're relatively well-adjusted, and you think that, you know, this is just a guy who's in the Army for a little bit, he's fine, he's going through life, he's fine. And that's the case, I would say, for the vast majority of veterans. Now, I'm going to tell you a story about my friend named Luna, who kind of fit into that category. So Luna was about a couple inches shorter than me, but about my build. He's from Arizona, and on my first deployment, his wife left him when we were overseas. So he comes home from Afghanistan. His wife had left him. She had sold the house. So he comes home from Afghanistan. He's homeless. He has no place to live. And he shows up in my barracks room at like 10 o'clock at night one night. He's like, "Hey, Davis, do you want to crash on your floor for a couple weeks? I got an air mattress." So I let him crash on my floor, and he was kind of not making the best decisions. He was drinking a little heavy, he was sleeping in too much for PT, and, you know, I was a young man at the time, so I wasn't as
diplomatic or reserved in my speech as I am now, but I just remember one morning I had enough of kind of babying him, and I just woke up, kicked him, and said, "Looney, you got to get your life in order, man. You need to like wake up and go to church or something. Like you're way out there, man. You got to get your life in order." And we went back and forth, but I still talk to him to this day, and he's his life is still has its up and downs, like we all do. But he ended up getting remarried. He has a son, and he does well. More importantly, he's a Christian. I think he struggles in some ways more than some of us here, but he's a Christian. It was very obvious. You know, I would have had to have been blind not to notice. Like, this guy's going through some stuff with his life. He needs something other than sleeping on my barracks floor and waking up at 10 o'clock in the morning and drinking a fifth of whiskey throughout the day. It's like, that's pretty obvious when someone is in that situation that they need some help. Another friend from my first deployment, a guy by the name of Tyler Whitlinger, not like Luna at all. He married to the same girl. They're still married. They've been married for 10 years. Very good soldier in combat, dependable, quiet guy, but a real likable guy. You know, we went overseas, did our first deployment together, came back home, did our train up. After our train up, went, did another deployment, came back home. He got out of the Army, and he's a mailman in Ohio now. Does great. You know, he works. His wife stays at home, does very well. And I talked to, you know, him and I still talk, and I mentioned to him, I'm like, "Hey, do you guys go to church?" And he said, "You know, Davis, I never really thought of it, because I've gone so long in my life. I've been through so much stuff. You know, I figured I've gone so long without God. Like, why would I need him now that everything in my life is going so well? I figure if I'm a decent person, I don't really have anything to worry about." And so you kind of deal with veterans. You know, my purpose of both those is you deal with veterans on different ends of the spectrum, because there's folks who get out of the service and they do well for themselves. They do fine. They adjust to society. They have a family. They have a good job. But we still need to reach those. And obviously, we have, you know, high-risk veterans. You can tell, like, you know, maybe they come into work with, they're not off at work. They're on their third or fourth marriage. They're having issues. Obviously, those folks have some issues from war, from the service, and they're kind of at high risk. I would say those are the people that need help and immediately need some sort of intervention. But, you know, there are different types of veterans in society, and we need to reach both. And the other thing, too, is that just because, like, my friend Whitlinger got out of the service and, you know, does well for himself, does well for his family, it's very easy for people like that to suddenly and unexpectedly struggle. And what I mean is, for me, if I see someone in a doorway and they're standing in a doorway for more than a second or two, that really bothers me. Because when I was on my second deployment, I saw someone standing in a doorway a little bit longer than they should, and they got shot. So to me, if I see someone standing in a doorway, I'm always going to be very on edge about that. But there's also people who are well-adjusted, and they still need to be exposed to God's word. You know, even if they're doing well in their life, they still need to, because their experiences overseas and the way they live their lives can put them, you know, in extremely high risk category. And what I mean by that is it could be anything from not sleeping well to, you know, the silent struggles behind closed doors that you don't expect. And it happens all over the place. It happens in our community. It happens in every community in the country, where you'll hear people who internalize so much of the pain or the guilt that they have from being overseas, and they just put on a good show, you know, try to seem like they're doing well, and then you hear a tragic story about them either drinking too much one night and going for a drive and it doesn't end well, or in a parking lot they take their life, and you never want to see that happen. But moving on a little bit from the dull and the dreary, you know, why am I talking about this, and, you know, like, what's my background, my personal experience with this? So I did two combat tours in Afghanistan as an infantryman. And on my first tour, you know, I can say that I went into the Army. I knew that it's what I wanted to do. I knew I wanted to go overseas in Afghanistan. I had grown up in a Christian household. So I didn't like join the Army because my life was going out of control or because it was something I always wanted to do. So I was happy I did it. Went overseas for a year, had some combat experience and other things like that, and came home. One thing I thought of was that, you know, it felt good. And I had a sense of false pride. It felt good that I knew that someone could hand me a rifle and send me on patrol. And I knew that regardless of who, you know, whatever enemy I was going to meet or whatever was going to happen, it felt good that I knew that if I had a rifle, I could fight my way out of the situation. Got promoted to sergeant. And on my second deployment, I was squad leader. We were attached to a bunch of different units on that deployment. And I became really good friends with a kid by the name of Christopher Landis. So he was a specialist and I was a sergeant. So I was in charge of 12 different soldiers, 9 of them in my squad, and then a 4-man machine gun team. And during that deployment, Landis, who could speak, he was an American kid, but he had went to an Army school where they taught him how to speak Arabic and then Pashto, which is what they speak in Afghanistan. And he had like this real fancy signals intercept thing where he could listen to what the bad guys were saying. So it was kind of cool because he'd like come over the radio and he'd be like, "Hey, Davis, they're talking about you. They say, when the big bear crawls up the mountain, we're going to shoot him." All right, man. Good to know. But him and I became really good friends. And I'll say that one of my only regrets in life is I never, you know, we were friends, but I didn't very much personally connect with him until about 2 weeks before he was killed overseas. Who here knows what an RPG is? Anyone ever hear that? Yeah. RPG, it's like a big bazooka. So he got shot pretty much right in the chest with an RPG. Probably if I was standing here, he was probably like where the doorway is in the back of a Humvee. And what I learned through talking to his family and other things is that he was actually a very devout Christian and very involved with the church. And for me, one of my regrets is I never talked to him about that. I never really got to know him on a personal level, on his walk with Christ or anything else like that. And I was so focused on when I was in the service about how I was proud of the fact that as a soldier with my duty, you could give me a squad of men and a machine gun and we could patrol an area and clear out any enemy who would be, that you could tell us, "Hey, we're going to do a 2-week insector patrol." And I was proud of the fact that me and my boys could go out, you know, clear through anything we met, neutralize any enemies, and get back home. Now, I don't say that to make myself sound like John Rambo or anything else. It's just it's the fact that if you practice something enough and you do it enough, you take a little bit of, you know, sense of achievement, sense of pride in something. Like if you're a high school football player and you score a touchdown, it's okay to feel a little bit happy about that. But you can develop this false sense of pride. And what I mean with that is you'll meet a lot of veterans who their life starts the day they raised their right hand and enlisted, and it ended the day they got out of the service. And there's more to that. You can harness that sense of duty that we felt, that brotherhood that you felt on the battlefield. You can harness that and apply it in a Christian method because, you know, something I personally come to terms that everything, you know, we already know as Christians that everything that happens, you know, overseas, all the wars, everything else from big to small, you know, doesn't really matter because at the end of the day, God's in control. So for me, when I hear about like the Afghan withdrawal or some of the other, you know, poor decisions that have happened there, you know, I contextualize it with at the end of the day, the dark hand of Islam might be trying to, you know, overreach again in Afghanistan. But at the end of the day, God's in control. And I'm happy that I had an opportunity to go over there and do what I could do and maybe change a few lives. But the big picture, it's not my place to think like that. And, in a way, you take these, you know, we as veterans would take like these aspects of our pride and happiness of what we're able to do. And you look at it, I look at it now years later, and it seems like in a way it's only justifying failure to truly live as a witness for Jesus Christ. One of my squad leaders in between those deployments was a guy by the name of Win Hill. He's from the South. He's kind of an odd dude, and he actually has brain cancer now. Three kids, and he has brain cancer from all the toxic exposure and burn pits and things like that. But I talked with him last week, and he told me that one of his regrets, kind of similar to mine, is he's like, you know, raised by my grandfather, he's very religious, and he told me that, you know, I'm a fool because I should be witnessing to all you guys and like building everyone up, and that's what I should have been doing as a squad leader. I told him, I said, man, like, number one, you have brain cancer, so you should probably focus on your treatment and, you know, your three young sons that you have and your wife. And number two, you brought us all home safe at that first deployment. So I think we're good on that aspect. But, you know, I say these personal stories to kind of give context. And when my friend Landis was killed, it was, I still think about it. I think about it, you know, almost every day. And that's just the nature of it. You have a life-changing experience that's going to kind of stick around with you. But I think about it, and like my immediate reaction to run to him and then what we had to do, because there was about, they actually wrote like a couple articles about it in like the New York Times and stuff, but there was, there's about 12 Americans. We were ambushed by about 90 insurgents. And, you know, I just, at that point I thought I was dead. I just wanted to make sure I didn't go out like a coward, but, you know, I run to him, and I already knew just from looking at him that his life had passed away. So I run to him, I grab his body, throw it on the stretcher, and then we're fighting our way to try to like establish a helicopter landing zone and things like that. But you know, it was kind of a point in my life where I realized like you can't live behind a gun forever. And you know, at the end of that patrol, we had to like fight our way to this old Soviet base, and then we got attacked. It was a long 2 weeks. But at the end of that, there was, out of those 12 Americans, 8 were awarded Purple Hearts, 2 were awarded Silver Stars, 3 of us were awarded Bronze Stars medals with Valor for Heroism Under Fire, and then everyone was awarded an Archon with Valor for Heroism Under Fire. So it was when, you know, and like I said, I'm not saying that to put myself out there some, you know, military hero or anything like that, but to give context. When you're talking to people, you never know if a veteran, what they've dealt with, what they've gone through. And on the same note, one of my friends at a job that I worked when I first got out of the Army, he was in the Navy in the 1990s, did 4 years in the Navy, was excited, you know, was excited to be a service member, and then got out. And he, you know, I asked him like, he was in his 40s, and you know, I was still in my mid 20s at the time. I asked him like, well, what do you do? And he's like, well, I got 2 kids and I'm divorced, but you know, I was in the Navy. I figured I'm just going to drink myself to death until I'm about 46, 47, 48. And I was like, man, I hope that's not me when I'm older. But, he just felt like life had passed him by. He never had that opportunity to, he thought he would have that genuine experience by joining the Navy, or he thought he'd have that genuine experience with any of these other things he did in his life. You know, he's real big at cars, he's real big at a bunch of other things, but you know, the only genuine experience that you need to focus on, you know, we all know the only genuine experience that you really can get through life is by, you know, a true and personal relationship with God and Jesus Christ. And but you'll see people on both ends of the spectrum. You'll see guys who have been through it all, have been through the ringer, and they're doing fine with their lives. And you'll see guys on the other end who, you know, serve 3-4 years and they're still struggling. And they need help just as much as, you know, like my friend Luna, who had been through a lot on that deployment and then came home, you know, was struggling with drinking and some other problems, you know, regardless of where they fall on the veteran spectrum, whether they are that like John Rambo type character and Arnold Schwarzenegger is going to make a movie about them, or if they were just, you know, regular person that decided they wanted to serve their country, they all need support, and they all need to know that you can apply those principles, you can apply that duty and that honor that you have from your time in the military, and, you know, God will accept that, and God wants you to use that for Him. You don't have to use that in any other direction. You can have a clear laser focus. One other thing with that too, you know, everyone raised their hand pretty much that they know a veteran or they know of a veteran. I would challenge each of us to, you know, talk to that veteran, get to know them a little bit, ask them when they served, what they think about their service. Be prepared for them to talk a little bit much. They might, you know, they're going to be excited. A lot of people don't care. You know, it's just the society we live in. People in general don't really care about anything. They want to go in, clock in, do their work, watch their cell phone on their lunch break, clock out, go home, order takeout or pick up food on the way home, watch Netflix, and then fall asleep. That's most people's life. It's kind of sad to say. So when you bridge that gap and you're willing to ask a potentially emotionally charged question to a veteran, they're going to see a lot of value in that. And they're going to want to discuss what they did in their service. And they're going to really appreciate the fact that you cared enough to ask them. So I would say that's just number one, just have a normal conversation with them. Ask them about, you know, what was it like being in the Air Force? You know, where were you at? How do you feel about these things? You know, you'll get a decent understanding for that person, the struggles they go through, and how they feel about their service, which is a great starting point. The second thing is a lot of veterans have families. When you have struggles or you have issues and you have a family, you can, if you're struggling with something and you have a family, you potentially have, you know, I have three beautiful kids and a great wife, you know, so they have done so much for me to help me, you know, stay grounded in my life and focus on what's important. But for some other folks, when you have kids and a wife and everything else, you can have extra stressors added into your life. And, you know, same thing for the wives of a veteran. If you're a young woman, you get married to some guy who, you know, is fresh back from deployment. You're thinking, like, you know, I married you. Yeah, maybe you have an idea of, like, some of the things that might happen, but you didn't, like, read the fine print and sign on the dotted line and say, like, yes, I'm signing up for nightmares at 4 a.m. I'm signing up for alcoholism. I'm signing up for anger issues. I'm signing up for, you know, drunk driving arrests. I'm signing up for, you know, potential substance abuse issues. So the families can struggle with it too. So if you know a family or if you see a family that's struggling like that with a veteran, a lot of times it does come back to the root cause of what they may have experienced in service or the way they are dealing with some of the issues that they experienced in the service. And it's important to kind of have that focus not only on the veteran, but on their family. So if you know the wife of a veteran who's struggling, or you know kids from a veteran who is struggling, it's important to reach out to them too, because that veteran might not be ready to find help with God. They might still be looking for help at the bottom of a bottle or something like that. But that family is hurting, and you know those kids should be at kids camp, and you know their significant others should know that there's people who may not exactly understand what she's going through, but you can listen and you can empathize with what's happened. So that's kind of like a big picture view. You know, and then I would say the immediate steps that we can take. So in October, we're going to have a great opportunity, like Pastor Jesse said, with, you know, Sergeant Major from the Marine Corps coming out. That's huge. Number one, like, the Marine Corps, it's very hard to advance in rank because it's the smallest of the services. And Sergeant Major in the Marine Corps is seen as like one of their like very like precedent setting ranks. Like, they pin that rank on someone who is not only proven in combat, but someone who can uphold the standards. Because, you know, I'll tell you the truth, when I was in the Army and I was on patrol, like, there's the Army standards of like shaving every day. You got to tuck your uniform in your boots, and you have to like do everything. I'll tell you what, when I was on patrol, I didn't care about shaving. I didn't care about what I cared about was, you know, getting through the next 12 hours and getting home safe. But what I would say for that coming up, some of the immediate steps we can take, you know, reach out to veterans that you know and invite them. If you know, you know, I'm going to let some people know at the Wilkes-Barre VA, some people at the American Legions and the VFWs around, like, hey, we're having a church function and a potluck. Veterans love free food. You know, as a, as I can attest to, you know, I probably have put on like 60 pounds since I got out of the Army, unfortunately. But, you know, invite people that you know that are veterans that talk to them. And then, you know, organizationally, it's good for us as a church to have that function. You know, there are veterans that are hurting, and they'll come to that just for an opportunity to know that people care about them and that they're accepted. And, you know, that's the first step to, you know, winning their soul for Christ. And even more importantly, well, not more importantly, you know, winning their soul for Christ, but in a day-to-day aspect, that's for them and their family, what they might see as more important. You know, that's the first step for them to really break free of some of the issues that they have and, you know, enmesh themselves in a different, different and better way of going about their life. So.
Hundreds of times.
What's that?
Speaking up and talking. You did a great job.
Crack.
What's that, Tom?
Oh, well, I've done that before too. You know, most of the combat people that I've known and still know don't like to talk about it. Just a lot of bad memories. And matter of fact, Andrew told me things. He said, I'll never tell Mom. So sorry, you're not going to get it out of me either. I'll share one thing Andrew went through. He went through some very hard times. And there was one time when he was in Iraq, and there was, I think, 9 Marines being sent out to this foreign faraway station to help. And Andrew was on the whatever kind of a vehicle it is to be sent out. And his sergeant at the time said, Shingler, I want you to stay here with me. Send somebody else. So he picked his best friend and sent him on. None of them come back alive. Now, it's not only hard that you lose your friends, but I'm the one that put my best friend on that vehicle. I'm the one that slept next to him on our bunks night after night, and it's empty now. So things like that, we have no idea normally. We have no idea what they're battling and going through, and for a long, long time. You know, Rich Mallott fought in Vietnam several tours in the Army, and when Andrew was getting out, I asked Rich if he would come and share with the whole group one Sunday, that first Sunday that Andrew was going to be here. And he said, I've never done that. I've never told anybody about what happened. But I think I'll give it a try. It was his first time he's ever shared that in over 25 years. And he said, it was so healing for me to have that opportunity. I could say a lot of things about Luke. He's a very humble guy. If anybody would have a right to brag, it would be him, but he's not a bragger. He's a very humble guy. But when I asked him to share at lunch the other week, he said, you know, I've never shared about all that I went through in Afghanistan. But he pulled out this tablet. I kept notes, diary the whole time. I think I need to do this at your church. This will be his first time. And just like Rich is going to be healed, was healed, I shared with Luke, I think it's probably going to be more important for you to come and share than even what we're going to gain from you. So he realizes that. So what an opportunity. That book that I mentioned, I know, Marty, you said you had one ordered, and Joel took my copy to read it. There's things in there you don't hear about on the TV. Like, example, one of the things that was happening when Luke was
leading the charge to take Baghdad over, that they, after the first initial day or two of fighting, they started going around the neighborhoods making sure everything was cleared out. And they came to this one neighborhood that everybody, all the citizens were saying, that building, they weren't saying that, you know, over there. And nobody could figure out what it was. So they got a few of the Marines around and over and checked it out. Here, it was a prison for all the young men in that city from, I think he said, 5 or 6 up to teenagers. They took all the young guys like that from the whole city and kept them in there for years, over 200 of them, basically brainwashing them and preparing them to fight for their country. And when they were released, the moms and dads just held them and cried. I mean, can you imagine, Jeff? You lost your son, Charlie, when he was 6 years old and he was in prison. You know what they were doing to him. And all of a sudden, the Americans came and released all those kids. See, we don't hear about things like that, but that's the reality. So what I want us to do right now, if you have one of those flyers, if you have one, you can rip them in half and you've got a piece of paper and give the other piece to somebody else. There's more out there if you need to get. But I just want us to spend some time praying right now to see who God would lay in our hearts. And I have made my list about a week ago, but you know, Saturday, 3 more people come to my mind. So I added them to the list. Oh, your next neighbor, next door neighbor, I know they're good friends with you. He was an ex-Marine. I ran into him about a month ago, and I was going over to weed some flowers that I planted by mom's grave in the graveyard there in Summer Hill. And he was mowing back and forth, and I tried to do this a lot. I tried to strike up a conversation with people. I struck up a conversation with him. I don't remember his name, but he's their next door neighbor. And he said, "Yeah, I heard you guys had a kids' camp over there. Sandy worked at it." I said, "Yeah, we had it for 34 years now." He said, "That's great." And I could see the tattoos on his arms, something about Marines. And so I said, "So you were in the Marines?" "Oh, yeah." And we talked a little bit. And he said, "Did you have any problems with camp this year, short-staffed or whatever?" And I said, "Well, number one, we hardly had any maintenance men. The second week I was fixing the toilets." Mars come up to me today and said, "One of the toilets in the girls' room is broke. You're such an expert. You can take care of that." They put a no trespassing sign now on it. But, you know, I didn't have any help hardly. And he said, "Well, I can do maintenance. I'll come next year and help." And he said, "Was there any other shortcomings in his staff?" I said, "Well, we only had a full-time nurse the second week. My wife is an RN. She'll come with me." So, you know, you never know when you strike up a conversation where that's going to go. And so I'm going to invite him again. Paul, Marsh and I are going to put together a little flyer with Luke's picture on it. And he sent me a couple and let me pick which one. I like the one with the white hat. You know, when I was a kid, my dad always said, "Whoever wore the white hat, they're in charge of the work crew." So we're going to get that picture on his mugshot there. And you need to hand one out to your next door neighbor. And maybe I'll drop him one off too. But down the road where the car accident was, right across the road from the Gallagher's, there's a house there. That fancy tree house, you know what I'm talking about, in their backyard, the blue house, fancy tree house. Jeremy and I stopped by his house a month or so ago, and I stopped by because I had some information on who lived in that house. It was my great-grandfather's. And I told them what we're doing. He said, "Oh, we want to be there." You know who I mean? the fancy house, the fancy tree house in the backyard. Two houses down from John and Ola's. You'll see it now you drive by. He said, we want to come. So you have no idea who's going to show up, but to invite them. And like I said, they might just come just because of this big shot hero is going to be here. But he said, that'll just be the bait to get them here. And then I'm going to tell them about Jesus. So it's a perfect opportunity for us to invite as many as we can. Micah, you know, we've tried to get John to come up here to church, or Jim to come up here to church for a long time. He's a vet. This is a perfect opportunity for me to stop by and give him one of those flyers. Jim, Diane, you need to come up and meet this guy. So let's just take a few minutes right now. Get your piece of paper and a pen or something, or if you can have something like that. Who doesn't have pieces of paper? I can give you these too. You got something to write on? You got a pen or something? So you can write those names down, because if you're like me, if you don't write them down, you probably won't remember. Lord God, we just come to you right now. I see this as one of those providence times where you have set up an opportunity right before us and right in our midst. And we want to take full advantage of this to invite people that need to be encouraged by you. And it's going to happen that day. And if we have friends, neighbors, relatives, we need to do our best to get one of those flyers in their hands. And probably within a week or so, we'll have them printed up and you can take as many as you want. We can always make more. But right now, we just come before you, quiet ourselves, and ask you to put some names in our heads right now, in our minds, so we could write them down and take the initiative to invite them. Sometimes it's better just to invite them, but a lot of times, pick them up if you can. Bring them with you or let them follow you so they can find the place out here in the middle of nowhere. But do whatever it takes. Write down the names that come to mind. I got a list of about 20, and I'm sure it'll grow. You know, I've already shared this with people out of the area. My Uncle Jim was Poconos. He's not too good of shape anymore. some friends of ours down in Florida. They obviously can't make the meeting, but we can make CDs and send them to those people. And that's my plan for the far out ones, to get the message that Luke's going to share. He used to be a Sunday school teacher. And he had a high school group because nobody else would take the high school kids. He said, I'll take them. And his name of his group was The Gospel of Luke, According to Luke. So he said he's going to come and preach from the Gospel of Luke to us. Now, obviously, you could take those lists with you. And like me, I carry it in my daytime or whatever you want to do. Add to it. I added three just yesterday to it. You know, the lady there is a vet, Wendy. God, help us to take full advantage of our friends, our relatives, our neighbors. And don't think they got things worked out so they don't need any encouragement. That could be just a facade they let on. Maybe they do, but maybe not. In Jesus' name, amen. Thank you, Tom.